two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you. We're continuing our series, celebrating 50 years of hip-hop, so hip-hop is 50. We've talked to a lot of DJs, we talked to a lot of MCs, we talked to some producers, but man, we don't get a chance to really chop it up with artists, aerosol artists, and we got one of the best, a pioneering figure. What do I want to call you, man? King Fade? King Shirt King Fade. That's right. And Fade is spelled P-H-A-D-E. You know what? I can give a little bit of a resume, but I think they should hear from you. You know, I'll let you run down some of the things that you've done.
Well, like you said, you know, it's 50 years of hip hop and we're celebrating. And I'm seeing that the artist is not really being celebrated as much as all the other elements. And I always tell people when I do interviews that the art is actually the foundation. You know, we are the visionary part. You know, without the vision, right, you can't imagine yourself breakdancing or imagine yourself, you know, creating music, you know. We all start out, you come out as a child from birth, you know, picking up cartoons, picking up crayons, and, you know, everybody starts with art, you know, and that's what hip hop has to acknowledge, that it's the artist first, you know, before you even build a building, right, you hit up a architect, right, and then he creates the vision, you know. And then people begin to build upon that. So that's where we are, man.
So, you know, the art part, or graffiti, some people want to call it aerosol art, has an interesting bunch of intersections. One, you have some people that have said, well, is it really a part of it? Because their interaction with the art was seeing mostly white kids who didn't want anything to do with jam culture. Then there are others that it's like, no, it's been here from day one. So there's always been a lot of people that have gotten into the art. That's one. But how do you distinguish and, you know, and align it directly with hip hop? And I'm just looking like when I talk with Flash and others early back in the days, it was like, I don't know, man, that's like the last element. Obviously, the graffiti was around way before anybody hit some turntables. But how do you, you know, situate it from your standpoint?
I mean, from my standpoint, a lot of the characters that try to speak about what we do as aerosol artists, they might have been afraid to get on the tracks. So fear drives you to something else. You know what I'm saying? We're the fearless ones, you know, that ran on the third rail, climbed on a train, ran on top of the train while it was moving, you know what I'm saying? So everybody doesn't have that type of heart to do that. And this is what we did. So when you try to, because you can't do it, so now you make it least important and make your part of the culture more important than another part, you know? But I believe that the art led me into wanting to do everything else, you know? I did the B-boy part of it, you know. Definitely in love with music because I used to be a record boy for a guy named DJ Doc LaRock and DJ One Time. And Doc LaRock is the one that taught Funkmaster Flex how to DJ, you know. But Doc LaRock is the guy who used to do jackets with acrylic on the back. And him and One Time went to art and design, and they both told me, yo, you need to go to the high school of art and design. See, so everything worked. I seen the whole, you know, I seen the whole synapse of it. You know, I seen how one part connects to the other part, to the connects to the other part. Now, when you got somebody like some white boys that might have lived on Allerton Avenue or whatever, and they was into rock music, and they feel that, oh, it's not part of hip-hop, you know? But the same records that they were playing, we took those records. We took the Aerosmith from them, you know, and took their drum and snares. So
it's and like, you flipped it.
Exactly.
But in that environment, how much of the style coming from the South Bronx and from the Brooklyns and what have you, coming from black folks, how much of the style that you all were executing influenced them, or was it an exchange?
For me, when we left Brooklyn and moved to the Bronx, like hip hop was just starting. So it wasn't really just a black thing. It was a multicultural thing. You know, with the projects we moved into, there was white boys that was writing. My brother was writing. My brother just happened to be writing with FaZe, you know. Puerto Ricans and blacks together writing. So I can't really say it was just, you know, what the style came through black people. But you had some white boys that was nice too, like Billy, you know, 167, who had style. Tracy 168. You know, who were they were respected and had style. So, you know, so it wasn't really just a color thing, you know.
Right.
There was definitely.
Well, what I was looking at more like, was there particular types of execution of the art that might have been different than somebody else? You know what I'm saying? And that's what I was trying to figure out. If there was something, just to make it easier, if you was in the Bronx, was there a certain style that people did that you would look at and say, this is somebody that came from this part of town versus somebody who came from another?
I'll tell you how I see it, right? You have everybody doing it, okay? But from the original man, right, black people, what happened, a lineage bust out of that. So you have a Phase 2 and Riff. And then after that, you know what I'm saying, they gave birth to Case and Butch.
Right.
Case and Butch gave birth to TDS, the Death Squad, you know, to you know, Chain and all of them. And then that era gave birth to us. So it was just one lineage that began to shine that happened to be black. But there were a lot of people doing it. So you see One Nation and everybody's doing it, but all of a sudden, like a prophetic line started, you know, with FaZe, you know, Strut, Super Cool 223rd. It just started from us, it became something different.
Right.
You know, our interpretation became cool, you know. And then they had the gangs out there during that time. So dudes was tagging up, you know, 223rd. I'm from 223rd Street. So obviously I'm a black spade, you right. know, things like that. And we created a culture behind it where everybody else was just still painting and, you know, doing whatever Stan Lee characters was there. But we took all of that and made something. We made it make sense. We made it. Like as if it was biblical, you know what I'm saying? Like right. a lineage came out of it, you know? But it was a lot of people doing it at the same time and a lot of different styles, but we just, because we all, I can say, are FaZe's children,
right.
you know what I'm saying? And Riff 170.
I want to build on that. We're talking with Shirt King Fade and our Hip Hop is 50 series. You know, apprenticeship and mentoring and learning from somebody, you know, above you. Can you talk a little bit about that? I think that's often lost when we talk about hip hop. People act like folks just showed up in the park and just did something. And what gets lost is that you did have to come under somebody. You did have to start and somebody had to show you the ropes. And so I'm glad you talked a little bit about that lineage, but maybe you can maybe go into depth in terms of, you know, was it a situation where you just got to write on the wall, or did you have to follow and go through certain types of protocols, almost like a rite of passage before you were able to really, you know, shine and come into your own?
It was a conscious choice, because you, when you grow up in these environments, you know, you hear stories. First, you hear the Nicky Barnes stories. You know, you hear the stories about the Ivan, the stick-up man. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, he used to stick up Nicky and them. Like, so, you know, you're like, so when you start hearing the graffiti stories, you're like, oh, wow, I want to be that type of dude. Right? So it was more, it was, because there was a lot of Lone Rangers that used to bomb. They didn't come under nobody, like Bantu. You know, he would freelance. He partnered with Mitch and them. Then he went down to East New York and partnered with Dondi and them. And, you know, they were, so, you know, that's kind of like, because there was a lot of dudes that would get down by themselves, you know what I'm saying? And they would be the leaders.
But how would they learn? That's the question. Or were they just coming in and blank canvas and creating something that eventually somebody would have to figure out?
Yeah, some would just be creative, you know. But for me, it was a conscious choice, because I knew that I wanted to be like one of the best, because one of the best came to my crib, you know, phase two. And I'm like, oh, wow. So I used to write phase three, you know, until I got to the high school of art and design. And then Katz was like, yo, you can't write a legend's name. So I changed my name to Fade, you know, and it's sad that people think that I got my name from a movie that came out 5 years after I created that name, you know. And then the person who made that movie said, oh, no, I made that name up. And I had to put him in Smash. It was like, yo, don't you remember you sent me a message and said all my artwork was in the movie? And I said, take it out. If you're not going to pay me, take it out. I was 14 years old.
Oh, so you were on the business tip right then early on.
Early on. Because at 14, I met King Case. So like I said, it was a conscious choice, because I was already bombing the train, you know, had a team. But when I seen the power that Case yielded within the in the aerosol community, I was like, yo, I need, you know, like, you just... He was connected to the streets. You know, he was cool with DJ AJ, Busy B. You know, and for years, like, I'm going to school, I'm coming home, I'm hearing these tapes, and then here you have a graph writer who is, like, connected to this, semi-retired. And I'm like, bro, you got to come out of retirement. And he was like, I'm going to do it for you. He said, I like your energy. I like how you move. He said, you know, I got something for you. And like 2 weeks later, he was at the writer's bench looking for me, and he gave me this outline.
Tell everybody where the writer's bench was, just so, I mean, I know what you're talking about, but for our listeners.
Yeah, the writer's bench was a gathering place where all the artists would come and see their work, their handiwork, you know, or their dirty work that they did over the weekend. And it was a place where you could come with your camera and take a picture once you saw your artwork, you know, and document what you did. It was on 149th Street in Grand Concourse, and it was ideal because you had the 4 train upstairs, then you had the 2 and the 5.
Right.
So the 5 was coming from the east side, the 2 was coming down the west side on down Lenox. So,
and all those trains ran from the Bronx to Brooklyn. So you so,
Bronx yeah. to Brooklyn. So 149th was it was definitely it made sense for that to be the bench, you know? Yeah, the writer's bench.
Let me ask you, talking with King Fade, can you walk us through what a typical night might have been when you were bombing on the trains? You know, like, what, you know, like, how did you prepare? Did you have to mentally get in shape? Were there rituals, you know, or things that you had to do in order to make this happen? And I always bring this up because I want people to understand that you didn't have cell phones. You didn't have all these different things that people take for granted. So you're literally working, you know, in the dead of night. How you able to scale up a train from an idea and have that accurate. Those are things that, for me, I think it's important to say that's technological proficiency, yeah. Right? And we never attach that word, you know, to the artists. And really make folks understand that y'all are not just creative, but also technical in terms of how you are executing things.
Yeah, I approached it, looking back now, as if we had a design team. Hmm. And whether it started in the lunchroom at Art and Design, or it might have been at Henry's, like, you know, you might go over there to get some paint from Henry, and cats are just sitting there politicking. You know, somebody walks through the door who you might have wanted to paint it with, and you're like, brah, what you doing tonight? Yo, we about to go here. What's up? Let's meet up, you know? But, I mean, as time went on, I had, like, established crews, you know, that was part of my crew. So they had their own crew, but they were also all rep TNT, which is the nation's top, which was my crew. And so on the sixth train, you know, I had LK, you know, Little Corrado, Jap 115, SO, Sade, Fed One, you know. And so if I wanted to go to the six, I called them.
Yo, sixth train.
To the sixth train. They'd be like, yo, we going Thursday night. Blah, blah, blah. This is the time. Meet us here. Boom, boom. And or just come to my crib like that. If I wanted to hit the G train in Brooklyn, then I'm calling up Tank. See what he's doing. He's like, oh, Wednesday, you know, blah, blah, blah. Or I'm calling Cedric, which is Say City, who did all a lot of Beastie Boys
right.
album covers and stuff like that. You know, Say had TPA, the Public Animals, and they was on the E and the F, you know, and the R and the N, you know. So we wanted to go hit that. We called them. So we had, it was the nation. So we had people in different places. We wanted to go to Brooklyn. I called DEC, TBC.
Right. Now, did you have to go at a certain time at night? Did you have to wear a certain type of clothing? Did you have to prepare did you have to prepare your paint cans? Anything like that? Did you have to write the designs down and then put them up?
I think the most part was having the actual design. You know, some of us were in a rank where, you know, the paint was brought, you know, to the yard for us. So I didn't have to carry, you know, it's right. Like, yo, how many cans we got? What we doing tonight? You know, and then, you know, the peoples that wanted to either be down or just had that respect, they would just bring all the paint. You know, I got that from Case, because Case, when he first met me, he was like, well, if you want to paint with me, you got to bring me some cans. And I was like,
how many cans would it take to do up a car?
We try to do like 50 cans, 50 to 100, you know. But I'll be like, I was like, Case, like, that's not me. I don't do that. Like, I said, I got people who do that and will appreciate. And he was like, well, bring them along, you know. But he did tell me, you know, like, as a minion. And I was like, I don't want to be that type of artist. Like,
and back in the days, you just didn't go up and buy the paint.
Right, exactly. So
you had to have a whole skill set just to, you know, to liberate the paint.
If I'm gonna jeopardize my freedom, I'm not giving that paint away. You know, I'm not going to rack just and bring it to somebody else. Like, it didn't make any sense to me, you know. But there were guys that wanted to be down, and there were guys that were down that were very skillful, and they had no problem. They was like, what, you painting with Case? Oh, I'm bringing 100 cans. So the paint never was really a problem. But one of the processes was really just the ritual was drinking Old English, you know, and just being nice, being mellow. You know, once we get there, we pull out our outlines. Case would go off the top of his head, you know. So sometimes I'd be like, yo, just do my outline in white, and I'll do the rest from there. So he might just outline it. And then as we just go with the feeling, because he kept saying, stop trying to be so technical. He was like, he didn't say the force, but he was like, just let go. Because he seen I was doing it too, like sketchy, and he was like, let it flow, bro. Just let it go. And I never let it go. I was just like, I got to paint this way. I got to paint how I paint, you know. But clothing-wise, my team, since we were, you know, we was 15, 16, so we was kind of considered elders already. We were like, we used to go fly, because after painting, we go to a party.
Oh, wow. So you had to really be nice not to get paint on you. Yeah. Especially if you was wearing at that time, if you know, it would have probably been it would have been Pumas, right?
Pumas, suede Pumas.
Yeah, so you had to be nice not to get them dirty.
Exactly, and then the quarterfield jackets, mm-hmm. you know, gloves. We would just wear gloves because we knew that, because there was times when we got chased and we might have been on a platform and there's one or two dudes who look like, we call them dirt bombs. Like, yo, you look like a dirt bomb. And the police wouldn't even, they'd look at us and be like, they can't be with them. And they'd be like, come in, and try to grab them. And we just standing there like, we going to the party, you know? Like, they never mess with us. So we found out that secret, like, stay clean, you know?
You know, before we talk about, you know, your foray into actually being a designer on shirts, what was your most memorable piece? Is there one thing that maybe you did that, I don't know if you caught it on camera, but something that you looked at and said, that is the piece?
For me, like, all of them were, because it wasn't easy.
But you got to choose one. One got to stand out.
Maybe two. One is we did, like, I think, like, 7 carts. And it was, and Butch had just came home. Actually, those are the both times when Butch came home, because he did like about 4 or 5 years. And Case was always talking about Butch. That's why I quit, because Butch is gone. He's been gone 5 years, blah, blah, blah. You know, so he was going from like 74 to like 78 or something, you know. And we did a piece together. That was like 4 carts, which was kind of monumental. It wasn't one of my best pieces, but...
Which line was it on?
On the 6.
On the 6.
Yeah, it was me and Richie, me and Scene did a piece. It was Case, Butch, Fade, Scene, you know, Hand of Doom Scene from the 6 Strain. Then I did the Little Corrado, Sade, and Fade. Like, I had to do the whole thing because they wasn't really, they just was good paint records. So I had to paint the whole cart. That one was memorable, but one that I think topped that was the second piece. And it was a Case, Butch, Fade, Agent, Kaz, and Kel, Shy 147 and Mayor. And that was ridiculous.
You know, how important was that 6 Strain line? Because, you know, the 2 and 5, all those, because, you know, one, I mean, you could talk a little bit about it. They're elevated at certain points and they're going right through the neighborhoods. But you know, if you're on a four, it's Gun Hill, and I guess 5 too. Yeah. No, 2. Right. But what I remember with the 6 is that it was a local train, so you could really see that. Versus if it was an express, it, you know, then you had to have a.
I only went to go tag insides on a 6. That was at St. Lawrence. Okay. It used to be in the middle. But when I painted on a 6, we were in the tunnel on 143rd Street. And mm-hmm. the 6 tunnel, so from 143rd to 149th.
Right.
Yeah, you know. But the last piece that I described with Kel, Kaz, Mayor, me, Agent, why it was so memorable is because it was at Gun Hill, right? So it was down a block.
Gun Hill Road.
Yeah, Gun Hill Road on a 2 train. So it's elevated in the middle, but the main thing, we had the T-Connection rocking that night.
Oh, okay. So you went straight to the T-Connection?
Nah, it's what we were hearing when we were painting.
Oh, okay. Okay, who was there that
Cold
night?
Cold Crush was there.
Cold Crush, yeah, that was their spot.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Cold Crush and probably Tom Soul Sonic Force. So we're hearing the beats, and we're over here getting high, and we're painting on a train. It was like hip-hop all together. It met us at Gun Hill Road. Everything, all elements.
King Fade, I'm going to come back and talk to you about, you know, your shirts. But I assume the music had influence, so I'm going to let you pick a song that we can play going into this break. What do you think we should play that captures the essence of you?
Just Begun.
Really? Jimmy Castor? Jimmy Castor? Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, here we go. We're going to play Just Begun. classic. We'll be right back. Back here, a little bit of Jimmy Castor. I mean, you can't help but get up on that. I mean, you didn't have, there was no Walkmans or anything like that, so you couldn't be listening to that. Or did you bring boxes with you when you were tossing up back in the days?
In the train yard, we would bring boxes, you know, especially like the ghost yard, because there was no activity going on there, especially like on a Sunday. So we really, really, you know, used to bring the picnic basket, you know, like the radio, play some music, you know, some Flash, whatever.
So Flash tapes were gold at that time.
Yes, Flash and Theodore tapes, top notch.
So we started off by introducing you as Shirt King Fade. And that's what most people outside of, you know, not knowing your history know you for. Talk a little bit about that and, you know, and contextualize it with being, you know, at a time when people were really being creative with their clothes, you know, whether it was rolling the pants leg up or, you know, getting a marker and painting your sneakers and doing all kind of things. So it was a do-for-self thing, but you took it to the next level, you know, with the airbrushing.
I mean, there was a lot of situations that led me, you know, to go down that path. You know, I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. You know, as a kid, I knew I wanted to work for myself, you know, only because, you know, I sold weed before, you know, sold weed in high school. And I seen how money, you know, exchanged for a product, you know, especially if you had an exceptional product, you know. And I took that. And then there were like certain jobs that I worked at that kind of led me to knowing the inside mechanical workings of businesses. You know, I worked for this guy named Andrew Cole, and he had an art gallery, and I was there basically almost like an assembly line. Like I would just and kind of like paint the background and take a stencil and hit it next. Stencil, hit it next.
And they were moving that product, selling it?
Moving it. The next artist would just like draw like the little desert scene, bomb, blah, blah, draw the trees. And I was like, wow, this is genius, you know? And one day, you know, I think I came to pick up my check. So he just sat me down, I don't know why. And he was like, yo, he said, you know what I do with these paintings, right? I was like, yeah, sell them. But he said, this is how I sell them. And he showed me the whole thing. He said, I sell them to hotels. He said, that's why I have to replicate. So he said, I go to hotels with my book. I showed them. They say, oh, we want this. This one's going to be in the fifth floor. This one's going to be in the fourth floor, blah, blah, blah. So it might be 10 paintings just on one floor. And he started showing me $1 million checks. Like he showed me a $6 million check. And I'm like, bro, you get money like this? Like, why are you showing me, like, you know, the criminal element was like, I was just snatching and run, you know? But I was calm and I was like, $6 million, that's nothing. It's nothing to him, so why should it be something to me? And all he don't even know how to paint.
Wow. So he was the broker for your creativity.
Yeah, he had a whole team painting, and he was just, you know, in the background. Like, he just show you what to do, how to do it, but he knew, but he would go to the clients.
He had the client base, which is important too, the buyer.
And he had the knowledge to say, I'm going to sell to hotels. Yeah. So the hotel in Vegas and the same brand in New York and the same brand in San Francisco, they all have the same painting. That's why he'll make, and each fifth floor was the same painting in each fifth floor, same 10 paintings. So it's like 50 paintings, you know, or 100 of them all over the world. Like, I was like, I said, man, I need to get into some game like this. Like, this is real game. So eventually, one of the guys who I pretty much empowered, like, to paint trains, Sound 7, he put an airbrush in my hand. He didn't teach me, but he put an airbrush in my hand and was like, yo, you need to do this. Now, mind you, the TC5 crew, all of them were airbrushing before me. Doze, he was at Wings on 96th Street. Doc was at Wings on 96th Street.
These are clothing stores.
These are clothing stores. Wings was the equivalent of Dr. J's, which is the equivalent of Demi Jazz, which is the equivalent of Snipes today.
Right.
You know? And Spank was actually the first one to be airbrushing. Spank TC5, Sound 7 TC5, Lady Pink TC5, they were all airbrushing before me. So I had no desire to airbrush.
But then you became the king. Shirt king.
Like you said, with the aerosol art, everybody was doing it. But it's just that lineage that shot out. Mm-hmm. You see? So they all were doing it, but for some reason, because I was telekinetically connected to Case 2, who was connected to Phase 2, connected to Riff 170, you know what I'm saying? It was just a natural thing that was bound to happen. I'm connected to too many great. So it's like, I'm thinking of it like, I don't want to do this. Why I need to do this, you know? But for some reason, I shot out of it. But I wasn't the only one doing it. At one point, I thought I was the only one doing it, but I had to remember that they were there before me. And I think everything just aligned that, you know, all the information that I had, you know, in my life, you know, the selling the weed, the this and that, I just applied that. And so I started selling T-shirts. And then I got multiple confirmations, you know, from entertainers who bought my shirts.
Now, were you doing this out your house, kind of this on the fly, like literally out the trunk of your car, right?
Yeah, I was literally out of the house first, you know. Once I started really making some money, I went to 125th Street because I knew Mecca. You know, I remember growing up and seeing all the Africans out there with that, you know, makeshift stores.
Right, with the vendors, you know, open air market.
Open air market.
Yeah.
So I said, well, now I got a product, you know. I'm not just going to Harlem now to go buy some dust or whatever, you know, or go buy some jewelry or some African soap or, you know, the liquid soap, or go to Heart is Hard and get they weed. Remember Heart is Hard, 125th Street?
Don't remember that.
They had Acapulco Gold. They had the Panama Red. Like, they was the first with it all, and they was real true dreads, too. And I don't know how they were just selling on 125th with a regular storefront. And they had T-shirts, Heart is Hard, all of that. Like, that's embedded in hip-hop history. People forget about Heart is Hard, you know. You can go get a little half an ounce, go uptown.
But they were selling something else, though, right, at the time? Oh, it was all weed? Okay. I just remember, you know.
T-shirts and incense, yeah. You know, the basic stuff. But you can get, you know. But they advertised it too, like, you know?
Yeah, I was never a weed smoker, so it wasn't my thing. But I always remember Bobby Robinson's store, you know, the record stores and all that.
Yeah, like
yeah
that.
So that's what I was going to ask, were you parked up around there?
I was up and down 125th Street. Okay. Just up and down, up and down. I didn't know any vendors that were there. I didn't know who was who. I didn't even know what the Apollo Theater was. You know, I probably walked past it 100 times. I just thought it was a movie theater or something. So I was just there that I knew Harlem was Mecca and Harlem was the money. Right. And if my product can sell in Harlem, I can sell it all over the world. And I knew I had something, and they was like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. And, you know, so cats started buying, and then they started expecting me to come every week.
Did you just sell your own designs first, or did you immediately start customizing?
I had my own designs. I had two ideas that I, and I got silkscreen, so I had silkscreen shirts, and then I had a couple of custom, but I would just take custom orders. And then I'll be like, yo, I'll meet you back here on this corner next Friday. And then it ballooned. It ballooned from there. Started making money.
So who were some of the clientele over the years as you evolved? And what were some of the, you know, kind of out there or kind of standout designs that you wound up doing for folks?
Well, the first celebrity shirt I ever did was for a guy named Larry Love. Mm-hmm. From Grandmaster Flash. He was their dancer, and he used to pop lock and glide across the stage, do the Michael Jackson walk.
They did a whole song about him.
Larry Love. And I had moved to New Orleans for like 2 years. I was going to go to school out there. And being that we knew Houdini, it was so Houdini and Grandmaster Flash, they had came to New Orleans, and I saw Larry, and he had my shirt on, bro. It bugged me out to see somebody on stage wearing my artwork that I did in my mother's house, sitting on the bed with the board in hand, you know, and doing it, and I just couldn't. I was like, wow. So I knew it was something now with the entertainers, you know, a couple of dealers from Harlem, they actually bought, you know, some shirts for me, which allowed me to level up my pricing. You know, I went from like $10 a shirt to $25 once I seen that type of money that they had in Harlem, and they were interested in what I was, you know, was doing, you know. Eventually, then the client list got bigger, more street people first, you know, and then I ran into Jam Master Jay, and that was like one of my biggest like transitions, meeting Jay, and Jay looking at the work and purchasing, wearing it on tour. But not only did he wear the shirts on tour, he said, you need to go to the Ave and find a store. So there would not be any Shirt Kings if it wasn't for Jam Master Jay.
He gamed you up.
He gamed me up. 17-year-old kid.
So you're on 125th, making these shirts, you know, hitting up first street folks and then some of the celebrity. And literally right there on the same block is Dapper Dan. Did you all ever have conversations or... Were you aware of him at the time? And, you know, Dapper Dan was, in his own right, an artist taking, you know, those designs and flipping them, you know, taking established designs, whether it was Gucci or whatever, and doing his own thing with it, you know. But, I mean, you and him on the same block, you know, is kind of something that I don't know if people had an appreciation for it at the time, but definitely looking back, it's something to explore.
I knew the legend of Dapper Dan. You know, I knew the legend part of him, but I knew that there's no way now, armed with what I knew, that I could approach a Dapper Dan. You know, I was in a baby stage with my artwork, and, you know, I know not to approach, you know, first of all, New Yorkers are hard, and they'll be like, you know, or I could be a cocky kid with whack. And then now I'm not likable, you know? So I move in seasons. And so 125th was like 84, 85. Jam Master Jay was 85. June 6, 1986 was Shirt King era. Right.
Just at the start of the golden age.
Right, man. Public Enemy, right? We had the big ass radio. All the jewelers was like, what the hell are y'all playing? Because we're playing, here it is. You know? Playing Eric B. Rakim just came out. They came out 85 because they had Roy Wilkins Park. Mm-hmm. They came out there with the whistle song. Like everybody would just stop and just like you could be walking up Jamaica Ave and once you hear that, you just stop. It's like that whistle would just hypnotize you. You know what I'm saying? And then you start, then you start whopping.
So you did stuff in Jamaica Ave too, up in Queens?
Yeah, the Shirt King store was on Jamaica Avenue in the Coliseum.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, and that, like I said, that was on the order of Jam Master Jay, go to the Ave. And me and Kashim went to the Ave. Kashim is from Jamaica Ave. He's from Jamaica, Queens. He's from 158 in Linden.
So coming out of Manhattan and then going up to Jamaica Ave, which is its own mecca and its own self, you know, for folks who don't know, you know, black area, you know, in Queens, a lot of foot traffic, et cetera, et cetera. But you also have people who have more money because they're out in Queens.
Yeah, I knew that. I knew that. And then, I mean, all the top rappers at that moment were coming out of Queens. LL, you know, Run DMC. Like, this and 85, they were at their peak, you know? So I knew there was a market in Queens. Once the Bronx started drying up because of the crack and Manhattan, it didn't dry up, but it just wasn't. It was something different there. It was just something different. Queens was like fertile land. It was nobody over there. Nobody doing art, you know, trying to sell art, you know. Definitely no airbrushes out there, you know. Aerosol artists, they were like on a low out there, you know. They didn't want to be.
And ain't no L trains out there either in Jamaica part.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, but you got the EF, you know, the Parsons.
Yeah, but it wasn't L, so.
No L.
Yeah, no
L.
No, right. Elevated trains for people.
Right.
But let me, so by then, so, you know, you're coming at this time, so like you said, Eric B's, Rakim's, Run DMC's, you know, Salt and Pepper, right? So these all became.
Audio 2, MC Light, Red Alert, Rising Up, Boogie Down Productions, you know. Like, it was a lot. 86 was like a big transition year, and it ushered in the Shirt King art as the official uniform for hip-hop. Mm. You know, people proudly wore their stuff in videos at Latin Quarters.
I was going to ask you about the LQ, if you went down there and...
Definitely. Like, we were part of the tapestry in Latin Quarters, you know? You had Paradise at the door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and first couple of times, like, he didn't let us in. So I had to kind of, like, break it down. Like, yo, we're part of this. Like, you know, like, we're part of this fabric. And he was like, well, do me a shirt. Did him a shirt. Never, ever paid. I never paid. That's why we just left. But once we did him a shirt, how many people with you? Come on. That's the Kings. Come on in. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. You know, it's always protected. Everything, you know, like... We were covered in Latin Quarters.
So where are you now? You know, what's happening with you now? I know you put out a book, you know, that chronicles all this. And do you still sell the shirts? You know, what's happening with you nowadays?
Yeah, I sell shirts. You know, I design, do a lot of collabs. Definitely do a lot of collabs with a lot of the younger brands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel that any gift you have, you are obligated to teach, you know, and give that gift away, you know, because it's not for you. You know, you're sent ahead, and you're sent ahead so that you can create streams of revenue so that your people can survive and your people can live, you know. So basically, I'm just showing the way, you know, taking that chance.
Real talk. You know, we got my man Reefer One. Reefer, man, step over here for a second, man. Because, you know, I used to see Reefer, you know, doing his own custom things, man. When did you first know about, first of all, thanks, Reefer, for bringing us, you know, together. These is your people's. But when did you first know about Shirt King Fade, and did he have any influence on what you were doing?
I mean, it's like, how could you not know? I mean, all the legends of hip hop, rap music at that time seemed like they were wearing the Shirt King's gear. So when I would see that stuff on, or see, you know, pick up an issue of Right On and I see people wearing it, at first I wasn't familiar with the name brand, the Shirt Kings, but I knew their work. And then I start looking at the detail, who's the artist? They said the Shirt Kings. And I started trying to do some of that artwork on my friends' clothes and do it on my own clothes. So, I mean, I was directly inspired, not just as an entrepreneur to create this type of artwork on clothes, but just the whole writing legacy. And so that's some of what he spoke to earlier. Phase 2, Riff 170, Case 2, these are the guys of the genre. These are some of the brothers I looked up to. That inspired me to do the work I did. So it's in a rippling effect, not just throughout New York, but right across this country, all the way to the Golden State.
Real talk, you know. Where do you see things going now? We're looking at 50 years. You know, you got all this new technology. Where do you see it going, or where would you like to see things go?
Right now, I feel we need to actually be in protect mode. You know, I don't know, for some reason I'm thinking that people are, outside forces are like, okay, 50 years, we gave them 50, y'all let it go this long, let's try to, because I'm looking on the gram right now and looking, and they're saying that there was no top hip hop album this year.
Yeah, but let's give that some sort of context. You know, I saw that too. So first thing, I mean, I'm just going to toss out, like, Billboard should never be our barometer. But if we're going to use it as the barometer, I tell people, look at all the records that are actually on the chart. And, you know, in the top 10, 6 of them are hip hop. And some, yeah. So we're there. And the number one, at least when they first put that out, was Carlton, I'm going to say Waylon, right? He's a country guy, right? So I'm the name is skipping me, but he had a country song on there. But we forget, if you actually listen to his music, it's all hip hop, right? He's using trap beats. He did songs with Lil Durk. Also on that chart is Taylor Swift, right? Taylor Swift's song wasn't charting until she got Ice Spice on the record. So, you know, I just want to tell people, you know, like, that's a nice little tidbit, like, oh, we weren't number one. We don't necessarily need to be number one on Billboard when we dominating the sound and everything else. Like, Waylon, the country guy, right? He owes a lot to hip hop, more than we owe. You know, we did him a solid more than he did us.
Yeah, I figured they were trying to create a false narrative. You know, to make people feel, but because they created that false narrative, I said, let me get in protect mode. Let me protect this culture more than ever, you know, because we are a culmination of every genre of music, every genre of art. You know, we're like the ultimate. So how can we not be in the forefront of it now, you know, and not give it direction? You know,
no. How do you feel about the AI art?
I want to try something, you know. Yeah,
I love it. My wife hates it. She's like, you cheating. You can't.
I seen the stuff Danny Hastings is doing. Mm-hmm. I was like, damn, I want to do something like that. Like, you seen his little montages that he's doing?
No, but I seen people get busy. I get busy on it. Yeah, I feel
like a Wu-Tang one. He did a Gangsta one, and I don't know how he's doing it, how he's creating it or whatever. But it looks dope to me, and it's with the help of AI. So I said, man, I wonder if one of us would do that. Like, how, you know, what, you know?
Well, I think the thing is that somebody like yourself and or Reefer and others would take it to a whole other level.
Yeah.
Because you're artists. You know, I'm not an artist like that. So simple thing that I might do, I might say, you know, mix this yellow with this blue. And, you know, I'm happy with what I got. But somebody like you might be, well, this different shades of blue. And you would know some little tricks that we wouldn't even think of. You know, you might say, give it on this angle. And we wouldn't even think to do that. So I'm excited to see how y'all would do.
Yeah, why not work with it, you know? It's like, why not create something, you know? Now, if it's there to mimic me and steal from me, you still, because... You know, my stuff is endless. You know how many like these clothing lines and stole stuff. I was looking at stuff last week and was like, golly, still. And I want to shut down my pages, but then I'll be doing a disservice to, you know, my folks that still need to see my work, you know.
But if you're in community with your people, they're going to be seeking you out anyway. Somebody's gonna be the man. You stole from Sher King. We going.
Yeah, but when you see corporate doing your stuff and it's like, and then you see cats that you hung out with that might have turned corporate, that might not even like look like you, but then you see them and you're like, damn man, like you did the jacket before I did it, but we spoke about this, and you ran with it, but because you getting a budget from somebody. You know, and it's I feel it's just not cool, you know, because, you know, I'm an entrepreneur and I don't have a per se budget, you know, and I got to create my own budget and be wise with what I do with the money to make it look like somebody's sponsoring, you know what I'm saying?
That just makes you more creative.
Yeah.
And do something that they can't see coming. As we close out, how can we get a hold of your book and what's the name of it?
Shirt Kings, Pioneers of Hip Hop Fashion. It's always been on Amazon, but now it was a hard cover. Now we have a soft cover. And the soft cover, which I've brought you a copy to bless you with, you know, it's kind of revised, which is, it's more friendlier. The art is more friendlier where it can stand in schools now. You know, we don't need to be, we have to be conscious of what we feed our kids. And, you know, if there's any photos that got some type of perversion or something in there, I feel it doesn't need to be in there, not for the direction that I'm going in, you know? So, yeah, this is a good book, good read.
So this is my book.
Yeah, that one's yours, bro.
Man, that's what's up. I'm going to take a picture of it with myself. Man, how do we get a hold of you?
Shirt King Academy on the gram. All one word, website, shirtkingfade.com, and then soon to come, shirtkings.com. I actually finally got the trademark for it. It was a uphill battle, but I finally won, so I got Shirt Kings now, trademark 2023, and I've been had shirtkings.com, so I'm going to open that up, you know, not only for me, but for community, so other people can sell art too.
Man, we appreciate it. Shirt King Fade and Fade PHADE. Thank you so much. Reefer One, thank you for rolling through and thank you for blessing us with this esteemed guest. And we're going to take a break here on Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
My last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.